This is Brian Alber reporting from the 114th National Western Sox Show in Denver, going on right now through January 26th in Denver. The best 16 days in January is our theme this year. Get tickets and learn more at nationalwestern.com. Got a very special guest with me today, Greg Eyeball, the USDA Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs. And he's actually here for the Bison Annual, the National Bison Association's Annual Conference and Gold Trophy Sale. I saw the press release. That's what got me in contact with you guys. I thought, hey, you're coming to the Bison Conference. You need to come to the Stock Show. But you've been here for a couple of days already.
Yeah, I try to get out to the Stock Show every year personally, if not professionally. And so this year it worked out that I could do both. I could come for just personal enjoyment, and then we're going to do some things here at the Stock Show. We're going to learn more about what the Stock Show has envisioned for the remake and almost greenfielding a whole new Stock Show here around some historic buildings. And so we're excited to learn about that. We're going to spend some time up at CSU. And then take in the Bison Convention, which, you know, this year we worked together with the tribes and got some a large number of bison through the quarantine process up at Yellowstone and delivered those bison to the tribes this year to have some new genetics go get out and about.
I should have probably interviewed you after you learn more about what's happening at the Stock Show so I can learn for myself where we're going to be eventually with our cattle shows, because we're in the historic Stadium Arena, which was built in 1908. And you've been in here several times, I'm sure, but I think this is a Republican National Convention one year.
You imagine that? This is this is an amazing facility still, though. I mean, it's still an enjoyable place to watch the cattle shows, and you feel like you're part of history when you're here.
You bet. I wanted to talk to you about animal traceability. That's been in the news recently, and one in particular, the RFID. You guys have put that on hold for right now. You're taking comments from producers. Tell me a little bit more about that, and why did you guys put it on hold?
So radio frequency identification programs are something that you know, a lot of the industry has been talking about. In the feeder cattle industry, a lot of the value-added programs use those. But in the breeding herd, where animals stay around a number of years and sometimes during their productive life they move from herd to herd, they really USDA hasn't fully taken advantage of the opportunities there are to make a traceability system in an area where we probably have the most disease risk, the breeding herd, something that could be more of a automatic system versus a manual. Rita bangs, tag, record it, hopefully don't transpose some numbers. And so we were trying to set forth some timelines to move forward. At that same time where we were announcing those timelines and had worked with the industry to kind of get what we thought they wanted, there's some executive orders and some requirements we put in place in the federal government that made changing a long-standing policy something that they wanted us to do notice and comment on. So we needed to back up so we could comply with those expectations from the federal government, and the executive order that the president put out gave us a chance to, we previewed the plan a little bit. We're going to take advantage of the opportunity to talk to producers a little bit more, fine-tune them, make them address some of the concerns that producers had. This year, we're going to be able to make available to help transition the herd. We're going to pay for brucellosis tags that are RFID. And we're also going to make another batch of just regular tags for people that don't bangs vaccinate to be able to use on their replacement females each year. So if we do that for several years, USDA will help fund the transition.
Well, I know the RFID would be a great thing for traceability for the food safety side of it, but for the cow-calf guy, for the ownership side of it, not all states are brand states, but wouldn't brands kind of take care of some of that problem ownership?
So brands are one form of ownership. A lot of states consider RFID to be proof prima facie, just like mm-hmm. brands are of ownership as well.
Sure.
And so for states that don't have strong brand programs, RFID could be another option for them to help protect producers from theft. USDA is not changing any regulations that have to do with how producers can use brands in the past or continue that same practice in the future. Brands would still be considered official ID under the new proposal as well.
As right now, I think they have two cases of rustling in this state right now, and if it wasn't for brands, they probably would have never found them.
Yeah, so. And you know, I come from a brand state in Nebraska. Sure. We have several registered brands. One of them's a family brand that my wife and children and I own together and we use. And so, you know, understand the importance of brands, but also want to have producers have a wide array of tools. But also the advantage RFID has is that it can be done automatically. We can implement that into a system that can be transmitted electronically, and we don't have to bring a cow in and, you know, look for the brand or several brands and then try to figure out what order that traceability or ownership came into play during.
True. Once again, my guest, Greg Eibon, USDA Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs. We've got some great news just at the end of the year and into the first of the year with trade. Phase one being signed between China and the United States. But one big question a lot of producers have, enforceability. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so you know, China is going to be a great new opportunity. And as we went through, as the president provided the leadership for this negotiation of new method of doing business with China. You know, as a farmer and rancher myself, I've seen plenty of examples where China says, oh, we're going to buy, and then they start buying and then they quit, and it disrupts the marketplace. In the corn market a few years ago, we had a big disruption because they were buying a GMO product and they decided they weren't going to buy it, and it caused a big disruption in the marketplace. And so this is going to set the rules where we will have predictability and some enforceability in it. And China has agreed as part of that to also purchase between $40 and $50 billion of farm products in the next few years. And so in the next year, each of the next years. And so at USDA, APHIS and AMS, we're already working to put in a system to track those purchases, to compare them to the benchmarks that USTR has put in place. And we're going to work together with USTR to make sure that they make those purchases, and the agreement has enforcement mechanisms in place that if they don't fulfill their promises, we can retaliate.
So they got, it's got some teeth in it.
It's got some teeth in it, and we're going to be tracking it. And so, you know, a lot of people are concerned, you know, it didn't address the tariffs. So how in the world are you going to sell it with the tariffs in place? And so, you know, this is maybe a different paradigm for trade agreements. A lot of times they've been dealt with a lot of the details along the way. We've just said, hey, we want you to buy, and we want you to buy this much. I don't care how you get it done. Anybody with any common sense knows that they probably have to do something with tariffs to incent their private and governmental companies to make those purchases, but we didn't get involved in that part of it. We just said, hey, buy this many dollars worth of products.
Oh, I think a lot of people are excited about the phase one getting signed, but I know a lot of producers are really excited and smiling from ear to ear that they got the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement through Congress, and it's going to get signed.
Yep. And so while, you know, in the beef and pork arena, we probably didn't make a lot of gains. We definitely didn't go backwards there. But there are some commodities that are going to have some huge opportunities. I think it's going to help us with some of our dairy problems that we've had. A lot of our dairy producers have really been struggling with prices and profitability. And we've seen a number, especially up in the Great Lakes region, go out of business this past year. And a lot of that was because of Canada's Class 6 and 7 marketing schemes that had virtually blocked their milk products from going up into Canada. And this does away with that. It's too late for some people, but hopefully we can stop and return some profitability and better prices into that region through this USMCA. Wheat farmers will also see a big benefit because they had a discriminatory practice in place that treated our wheat as inferior to the wheat produced in Canada.
The commodity farmers were excited, but it's not implemented yet because Canada still has to do something, correct?
Yep, Canada still has to take a vote on that, and we're looking forward to them doing that. I think that I think it'll be very soon is my understanding. And then, of course, we're very excited about Japan.
Yes. On the beef guys, really excited about that one, too.
Yeah, you know, beef has big victory in the China agreement, too, in that they're going to eliminate some of those restrictions they had in place for age, feed ingredients, and hormones. And so we're excited about that on the China side. But on the Japanese side, this brings us in compliance. We'll be on the same tariff footing as our competitors in that marketplace. And so while we've had huge success in Japan, we've built our brand, Japanese consumers want to buy U.S. beef and pork, this will continue to allow us to be price competitive in the same relationship that we were before. Obviously, South American beef is cheaper, Australian beef is cheaper, but when consumers go to the marketplace and make the relationship between price and value, this is going to keep us in that same competitive framework we were before.
I'd be remiss if I didn't say it's these trade promotion programs are going to help, or they will help, I should say, the corn industry. Carter Corn's one of my sponsors. We've been up here by corn and DDGs.
Right. So DDGs will definitely have an advantage in China again. But, you know, corn benefits when we sell beef and pork.
True.
Because that's how we add value to our corn and soybeans every day in the U.S. is by putting them through livestock. Chickens, beef, and pork all eat those feed grains and soybean meal. And so in many ways, we don't have to ship as many pounds of corn overseas. We can ship it in the form of beef and pork and chicken.
Sure. Well, we're all excited in ag, that's for sure. If you can't tell, I'm smiling. Not just from the trade standpoint, but to get the opportunity to visit with Greg Ibaugh, USDA Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs. Wanted to personally invite you. I know you're probably going to be on the road next week. You don't know what your schedule is. I don't know what mine is, except next week I'll be in Greeley, Colorado Farm Show. I'd love to have you come out, if not this year, next year.
Well, we would sure love to do that, and we'll have to definitely put it on the schedule for next year, and maybe I just stay for come to the stock show and stay for until your farm show.
We'd love to have you. But any final thoughts before we let you go? Something we might have missed.
No, I just think that there's a lot to be excited about in agriculture. President Trump and the Secretary have worked really hard to break down barriers and create opportunities for farmers. And while farmers were waiting on the trade agreements, they made available trade mitigation payments that helped farmers get through that tough time. I was at a food bank this morning that is the recipient of a lot of those food products that we buy. And the Rocky Mountain Food Bank just expressed how excited they were to have food, the high quality food that was being supplied to them through trade mitigation. And they're actually worried about what happens when we get the trade agreements in place and they don't get that food anymore. So good to hear.
But there could be a third round coming. I think I heard Secretary Perdue say something. Maybe.
So the third tranche of payments, I think he's indicated that farmers should feel comfortable in expecting them. Those haven't been officially announced.
Right.
But the third round of trade mitigation, I think we're going to, it gives us an opportunity to kind of see how fast the markets come back on because of these new export agreements. And, you know, we're going to analyze that. And part of that will be what the president wants us to do as well.
As a wheat producer, I'm hoping the wheat markets rebound quickly.
Yeah, we all.
They were up today, by the way. Anyway, I want to thank my guest, Greg Ibaugh, USDA Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs, for coming to the stock show, sitting in the historic stadium arena, and visiting with the barn. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
You bet.